Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, part of the amazing FBA podcast family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7 figure exit and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the 10K Collective podcast, the place to be for 6, 7 and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers. Now, the word Amazon's pretty narrow. I normally think e-commerce is broad, but today we're going to talk even broader than that. So today's guest, Talor, has been helping people to get retail ready for a long, long time. He's been in the space for a great deal of time, and we'll hear more about him in detail in a second. But the main thing he helps people with is get ready and actually helps them to actually get introduced to and actually start selling through some big box retailers, which, lest we forget, I guess we're still talking about 85 to 90% of retail, right? So first thing, welcome to the show. Great topic to be addressing.
Thanks. Thanks so much. Thank you for having me today.
Pleasure. Appreciate so where in the world are you coming to us from, first of all? Let's get a bit of context.
Well, I'm located right now for the last couple of years. Just a quick bio about me before we start. So for the last 18 years or so, I've been working with retailers in the States. My market is the USA. That's the main market I work with. Been living in Asia for like 12 years. I was having my manufacturing facilities in China. I was living in China for 7 years. So in my background, I'm coming from the manufacturing side, and I understand all the, you know, all the chain that you have to go through when you start with a product and develop it and ship it and all this process and everything. During the years, I've seen a lot of, you know, changes in terms of the e-commerce, a lot of people running to the e-commerce and everything. But since my thing was retail, I just choose to stay there and to strengthen my power there. And I've been working with like different retailers in the States, something like 60 different retailers. We're talking about the big boxes. Some people call it big boxes, retailers, department stores, brick and mortar. There are a lot of names to name it. Just brick and mortar is a wider term, not necessarily only big boxes, but physical stores in particular. And during the years, I've been selling a lot of different products from different categories. Since 2017, I stopped producing my own lines, and I was basing my sales on stuff that I have with my partner in LA, on the ground stuff, products. And at the same time, I was also approached by Amazon seller trying to sell in the retail space, because some of them kind of understood there's like more market that they are missing. And since you already, you know, as an Amazon seller or e-com seller, you produce and you do the whole thing with the shipping, with the warehouses and all this chain, then why don't you sell on other places as well? Not to mention that, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket is a little bit risky, especially with Amazon. They're changing the rules every day, and we all know how it is. Well, Amazon is a great platform. There's no question about it. A lot of people made a lot of money on that and still making, which is great. But there are so many other things out there in the retail market, and we will talk about it later. Anyways, what I started to do is, yeah, work with Amazon sellers. We will talk about it a little bit later, in different forms, different variations, and sell their products as well to the retail space. So that's my trying to do a short brief about myself.
Yeah, well, I guess compressing 18 years of experience, that's pretty impressively succinct. So yeah, well done. 7 years in China, obviously, that very, very important. You've worked in the US and with US companies. And we should say from the outset as well, for those based in the UK or who are American-based but trying to sell in the UK or Europe, that you focus on the USA. But I have to say, I suspect that a lot of the strategies and approaches that work in the USA are going to be very applicable in the UK or other markets, I imagine, as well, right?
Totally. Yeah. I'm working with Australian vendors, New Zealand, UK, Colombia, Israel, of course, a lot of different places. And I've been seeing during the years, especially in the last 2 years, that a lot of them just took everything, you know, we do together, and they implement that on their countries. So my market is not South Africa or Australia or anything, but as long as you know how to act on retail side, usually you can just copy paste it to, you know, any country.
Yeah, it's definitely surprising, isn't it, that given the geographical spread between Australia, UK and America, they kind of divide the globe into three almost. Nevertheless, culturally, there's a lot in common in terms of, you know, the expectations, and there's always nuance, but you're going to pick that up as you go anyway, right? So, yeah, the first major question I've got to ask you then is the dumb question that is nevertheless for anyone who's in e-commerce and they kind of self-identify as an e-commerce seller or whatever. Why even bother with that old school offline brick and mortar world? Isn't it just dying, especially under COVID? Is it even an opportunity anymore?
No, it's not dying at all. There's a lot of talks about the retail apocalypse, and I've been hearing this for like almost a decade, but there's no apocalypse and it never happened and it's not going to happen. Let me explain. As of today, the numbers are showing statistics, not what I think or what I see, just statistics, you know, from everyone can Google that, that, well, first of all, there are 320,000 physical stores in the States, which is, I mean, people, when they want to say something big, they talk about millions. But when you talk about not millions, 300,000 stores, this is like a huge number, a huge, huge number, a huge potential. That's number one. Number two, moving forward with numbers, Amazon is still between 10 to 11% out of the retail market in the States, not the online market, the whole retail market. And once you know and understand that, you know, this data, you know that there's like another 90% that your products are most probably not being exposed to. And this 90% is built from, I divide it to few blocks. It's easier for me, you know, to see it that way. But brick and mortar is just one block. It's a huge block, but it's one block. Now, inside the brick and mortar, you have like discounters, you have high-end, mid-end, big boxes, you have different, you know, different kind of companies. If you look at Macy's, they have like more than 800 stores. If you look at a small retailer like Walmart, 36 stores. But if you look at big retailers like TJ Maxx, they have 4,000 stores. CVS has almost 10,000 stores. We're talking about, you know, very big companies. And these companies need products to sell. Now, before we go to the products and everything, so this is one block, okay? It's divided inside, obviously, but this is like the retail, like what you call old school. And this old school exists. There are still, you know, teachers and students and everything. It's still selling and it's selling very good. Whatever you do, there's no way to change the fact that going on shopping with friends, with the wife, with the kids or whatever it is, is like an experiment, you know, it's like having fun. It's a part of something. It's not just going there, buying it, and that's it. So a lot of people, you know, especially in the States, they would buy on Amazon. No, there's no doubt about it. And they would buy on the other like online platforms, but the brick and mortar is not going anywhere. It's, you know, it's something that's going to last, I think, like still for like decades. So that's the first block. The second block is those retailers, since they understood the potential of, you know, of what's happening on the dot-com, they realized that, and they obviously raised their own dot-com platform. So if you look at the top 10 in the States, obviously Amazon is number one, and then you have Walmart, Etsy, eBay. That's not the proper order, but those are the big four. And then you have BestBuy.com, and Best Buy is a retailer. They're number six, if I remember correct. Macy's is number nine. You also have, I think Sam Club is also on the top 10, and Target as well. Target is either five or seven. So you, inside those top 10 websites in the States, you already have four retailers. Now, think about what's happening here. Now, we just spoke about one block, and another block is the dot-com, but those blocks, they have like, you know, there's a match there. Because once you start working with Walmart, and people know that, and selling on their online platform, which is something that a lot of Amazon vendors managed to do in the last two or three years, you know that you have a potential to get to the stores as well. And you also know that you really want to get there, because you're not going to be there like you are on Amazon or Walmart platform online with like tons of competition. You're going to be there with competition, but not like you have on the online. So that's, yeah, the second platform. And that's not the only dot-com that we're looking at. There's like more dot-coms. If you look at the top 50, 60 dot-com in the States, the majority of them is like product related. Yeah. And another, the third block that we can look at is, I call it special channels. Now, special channels is like channels that people usually don't think or are not aware of them being existing. For example, and this is a great example, if you look at subscription boxes, subscription box is like, there are companies that are like offering a box full of surprises every month to their subscribers. And let's say they offer them for $99.99, okay, like $100. They are showing value of this $100 as a market value of $500, $600, $700. But then customers are getting it for $100. It's very easy to understand if you think about what's happening behind that, behind the scene. Because if vendors are selling them for wholesale price, and we will talk about pricing, which is lower than the retail price, then, you know, this $100 actually really worth much more than what it is. Not to mention that it's quite fun to have, you know, box full of surprises every month. Now, you might think that this is a small business, But that's not the case. Let me tell you a very interesting, not big, but very interesting data that I just ran into a few weeks ago. Every person who ever bought anything online in the States, okay, which means the majority of the people between the age of whatever, 12, 13 until 60, 70, I guess, sometimes even 80, but that's the majority of the population. So out of this population, more than 80% are registered to any subscription box, to at least one subscription box. This is an incredible information that I'm bringing you here, because when I ran into that, and I was working with subscription box back in 2018 and 19, but when I ran into that info and that data, I was like, oh my God, I'm missing something huge here. That means, you know, that means that there's so much, you know, open market and so much market out there that I'm just not there. And then I started, you know, immediately to Google, because that's what we do when we find something new. And I was like, oh my God, there used to be like 5 to 10 big companies and that's it in the States. Now there's like, it's all over the place. There's like tons of companies, and there's like companies for subscription box from pet category, beauty category, toys category. I even found a lot of companies, because someone needed that for his business, of CBD, you know, cannabis, not cannabis, but CBD. And like, you name it, each and every category. You know what? It's funny. By mistake, I didn't even look for that, but I found that there are metal subscription box. Metal, I mean, you know, metal music, like heavy metal. All right. So like with all the bands and, you know, the shirts and the accessories and all this. And I was like, oh my God, even for that, like it's a whole huge industry.
That's huge.
So you just need to understand one thing here. There's companies, a lot of them, that having like between hundreds of thousands to millions, like if you take the top 10, each and every one of them have like between 5 to 15 million subscribers. That means every month, 5 to 15 million boxes, products, multiply, you know, by few products. So, hey, they need products, right? And I'm there. I have products and my products are cool. I need to sell them. So subscription box is one of the special channels. There are also other channels, like media channels, like a lot of media companies in the States are selling. And I ended up doing some sales like that, selling to, you know, like media kits or promotion items or stuff like that. Instead of having it, you know, in-house, they just give it to media companies, and those media companies are doing it for them. Another channel on the special channel, I love that channel, is TV. I've been showing in TV with products for a couple of times, and this is like a big one. And it's totally possible to do. It's totally doable. It's not something, it's not on the sky. And I'm not talking about shopping channel. I don't personally like shopping channel. In shopping channel, you feel like, I'm sorry for the term, you feel like being raped. Like, buy it. That's what you hear. It doesn't matter what they say. It's like, buy it. No, that's not. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like normal channels like Good Morning America, which people from the States would know. It's on ABC channel. It's like at least twice or three times a week with Tori Johnson, very famous figure in the States. She's like Tori Johnson of the shopping, okay? So I'm sorry, like Oprah Winfrey of the shopping. So yeah. Tori Johnson, yeah. If you run your products on her, there's a, how do you call it? There's a, I don't know, slightly 1.5 minutes of selling products in her show, like a segment.
Sure.
And if you're showing that segment for 12 seconds, you're going to be exposed for like 40 to 50 million houses in the States. Think about it. And with, you know, with your products for sale. So, and these are like huge orders. Anyway, those are the special channels. There are more, but I don't want, you know, to dig too much. Last channel, last block inside the retail, I'm going to make it short, is the brick and the specialty stores. Specialty stores, like standalone stores. They're not retailer, they're not big box. It's a moms and pop stores. That's how they call it in the States. Like, you know, family business. They have a store either in the mall or outside in the street, and they sell products and they need products. Those are the specialty stores. So those are the four big blocks.
Wow. So there's a lot to take on board here, but I would say a few things that strike me immediately from this sort of business model perspective. So I always look at things from the biggest picture possible and then zoom in. So my first question is always, is this an opportunity? And the first thing you said, you had me at the word subscription. So I've read The Automatic Customer, which you made a conversation. John Murillo, I can't remember who wrote it, but the value of businesses that have a subscription element is just astronomically higher than you have to hunt for a new customer every single time. Even if you have a Shopify store and you have loyal customers, there's a really big difference between they tend to come back frequently and buy, if they buy this, then they'll come back on average 4 or 5 times a month versus a guaranteed every single month subscription, right? It's a beautiful thing. So for me, I'm also excited by the word subscription. I don't care whether that's a SaaS business, coaching business, or a physical retail for that matter. From the business model, I know the valuations for those companies are higher, the revenue is more stable. So you have me at the word subscription, as I said in Jerry Maguire. But also, I think the sheer size of it is exciting, but also, I suppose, intimidating. So I suppose that brings us to the next question is going to be how we do it. And I know we're going to deep dive into that. Before we do that, can we try and bridge the gap between this massive landscape you've just painted of these different types of players and then the humble, you know, private label, or maybe somebody's got custom products, they're selling on Amazon, they know what they're doing, they've got maybe 10, 20, 30 SKUs, they've got profit, they've nailed down the supply chain. How do you even go from there? How do you even make a decision about where to focus next? Because there are so many options. How do we make that decision?
Right. So normally, if you don't know the market as good, then you would just look at your own products and start, you know, searching for similar or parallel products in the market and see where could you find them. For example, if I spoke about the big 10, okay, and I have products, let's say I have whatever, kids game, okay, whatever game it is, plastic, wooden, whatever, I would go and search for stuff like that in Costco.com, in Target.com, not in toys retailers, but in normal retailers. If I find that, you know, there's on the online, if I find those similar products there, I know that they have them in the stores as well, most probably. I could even try on YouTube and find some more. This is a very good tip. You can do like Costco walk-in store or whatever you Google, and then you can see a lot of friends that, okay, I didn't know that Costco was selling that. Sometimes they have different stuff in stores and on the online, not sometimes, but always. And then another step you could do, you could try and research, like the example I gave, like if you look at The View, which is another segment on Good Morning America with the ABC channel, or Deals and Steals, you would see what products they sell. And then you would know, okay, they don't sell my kind of products. I mean, you can scroll back like few weeks, few events back and see, like, you know, they're having like 5 to 10 labels each and every time. Most of the cases, 5 labels. So out of, you know, a week, if you don't find, or 2 or 3 weeks, if you don't find labels that are on your same category, you say, okay, this is not my space. And then the same thing you could do with the other spots. And also, you know, it's things that should make sense. Like I'm seeing people that are selling, like, let's say, smoking tools. So it makes sense that smoking tools, I'm not talking about cigars, I'm talking about cannabis smoking tools, you know, grinders and stuff like that. Obviously, I spoke with guys like that today, you know, just this morning. And they were like, mate, we don't want to sell in big boxes because we don't think they're going to sell our products. And I was like, right, you're damn right. I mean, I've seen grinders before, like those kind of grinders, and they're not existing in the retailers because, you know, rules, whatever. Reality, I don't know, but that's the case. So for them, it would be specialty stores. Because if you look at specialty stores for, you know, for smoking tools, there are tons of them in the States. So that would be a better channel for them. So common sense, a little research, and you would probably know where your products could sell. Not to mention that you could even use Wikipedia and search literally for like certain category retailers. Like if I would, you know, look for electricity retailers across the US in Wikipedia, I would find the big 5 or 10, and then I would know, okay, my electric items could fit there or not.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, I suppose the only thing I would say about the word common sense is, what's common sense for you with 18 years experience in the industry probably isn't common sense for most of us, hence what we're trying to, I suppose, give people a bit of, you know, common sense from your view. But it's true that obviously certain bits of common sense apply. Like you're never going to find people selling, you know, cannabis smoking equipment in, you know, a family friendly store because it doesn't fit their image. The lawyers are worried, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I can see that common sense applies. And also very interesting, I guess what you're looking for is simply a commonality in the categories that whatever channel it is sells, right? It sounds like that's more or less your approach. Is that right?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Perfect.
Like sometimes I do feel like a police officer trying to handle the traffic, you know, this goes to there, this goes to here. Because you're right, it's a big question here of where is it going to be. But if, for instance, you have beauty items, just for the example, if you have skincare items, you would probably think about Walgreens or CVS, but you could think about OTC, over-the-counter in other, you know, pharmacies or pharmacy chain stores. So yeah, that's the common sense I'm using. It's not like something special. Yeah.
Except that even the word like OTC is for you a standard abbreviation, and you're wise enough to not leave a three-letter abbreviation in a podcast. Very good, over the counter. Right, but even so, it's a landscape.
The category would know, wouldn't they?
I guess so.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, I suppose that it's easy to assume knowledge. I mean, some stuff would be, because I'm not a US based consumer, so that would be common sense to a US based consumer. But some things are easy when you know how. But I do think that it probably is less obvious to people who are coming from a pure e-commerce perspective, because they've probably never had a retail background. They don't treat it as a subset of retail. They think of it as a thing in itself, and they've never looked outside of it, which is why I wanted to get you on the show, because I think you look at it from the opposite end, right? You look at everything as retail, of which a percentage is e-commerce. So obviously, we're going to get very much into how to get retail ready. We've got a six-part framework you have, which is great. Love simple frameworks. But I'd like to just in this segment, draw it to a close with simply asking, what stuff do you do to help people? Because obviously, it is quite complex. You have what you call common sense, and what I would say is hard-won experience. So what is it you offer people if they have a decent catalogue and things? I guess, first of all, we've got to ask, who do you work with and who do you not work with? Presumably you don't work with somebody who's got like one SKU and is making a few thousand dollars a month. But so who do you work with, and how do you help them?
Okay. So, well, basically it's before I even start to work with anyone, I usually send them, you know, to fill a form so I would know what they sell and I can, you know, try to evaluate what I'm seeing here. If this is like something that the retail would be an option at all or not. And when I say retail, again, I'm talking about the whole blocks. It's not only retail, it's the TV and so forth. With one or two SKUs, it's going to be hard unless those SKUs are very special. And I've seen people with even one SKU. I'm selling one SKU right now for Australian company, the best lady on earth, really the best lady on earth. When I've seen the SKU, I was like, oh my God, this is one SKU. What am I going to do with that? Because like, what's happening? And then I was like, so what's special about this product? And she was like, mate, nobody have this product in the US. I'm the only one. I said, the next thing I was like, that's it. I want to sell this. What does it take to sell? That's what I want to sell, because it's unique. And back in those days, there was, I think she had a design patent in the beginning, and now she's supposed to have utility. I'm not sure. But even without the patent, it's so unique product that I don't mind being, you know, with one SKU. Obviously, it has different shapes, but if the SKU is the same SKU, the product is the same product. So that's number one. Number two, if you don't have something special, but from the other hand, you have a lot of SKUs, you have a lot of variations. So yeah, definitely, it's most probably going to be, you know, good enough for retail. Why? Because when they look at it, the big boxes from their side, they are thinking about, you know, what's the benefit of working with you? If you have a special product, obviously we want you, because you're gonna answer our what they call empty shelf. They call it blank. I'm sorry, I forgot the term. White space. So white space is a term refers to like a situation where there might be a place on the shelf, but there's no product. And then you come up with the product and say, oh my God, we can put that on the shelf. Because this is like, wow, we don't have such a product in our shelves. That's a white space. They also look about, you know, they're looking from their side, how is it going to be working with you? It's a huge thing. And they're trying to define if you're like, there's a big term, what we call, and we're going to talk about it, retail ready. If you want to work with retailers or with this retail space, you have to be retail ready. This is the biggest term I could think about. Retail ready means that, besides all the things that we're going to mention later on, retail ready means that you know what they're talking about and you show them that you know what they're talking about. If they identify that you sell all only in e-commerce space and they can identify that in seconds, most cases they wouldn't want to work with you, even if you have the greatest products on earth, because they are afraid. Because it's not the easiest thing on earth to be a vendor for retailers, especially for the big boxes. But it's totally doable from the other hand. Yeah, it's not like, it's not in the sky.
Yeah, very doable, then, but you need to be competent and speak their language, I guess, apart from anything else, is the sense exactly that I'm getting from you. There's a different jargon, there's a different mentality, which is, yeah, it's not a huge gulf to bridge, but if you don't do it the right, then they're not there to educate you and hold your hand, right? And that would waste their time, I could see.
Right. I mean, when I talk with Amazon vendors, and I don't sell on Amazon, I never did. The only thing I know is how to order some, you know, kitchen stuff for my wife on Amazon, if at all. But then when they say, you know, hijacking, PPC, I know the terms because they speak about it all the time and I kind of understood them. But I don't speak the language, but I just know a little bit. But that's good enough for me to communicate with Amazon sellers and know what they're talking about. So that's what I mean. You don't have to be expert. You don't have to be, you know, super knowledgeable, because that's we'll get to that, but that's things that I'm doing in the process of working with me. And then back to your question, just to wrap it up.
Yeah.
As long as you have like somewhere between 5 to 20 SKUs, and they are a little bit different from the others, you're doing something different. You're not bringing the same shelves like everyone, or the same pans, or the same cutlery, or the same knives, or whatever. You're doing a little bit different. You design them. You invest your, you know, you're making it different. It's not line of products. It's a brand. Then you have definitely most cases a lot of chances to sell in the retail. Okay. There's a guy in the States, most of the people know him, Noam Farrar. He termed it very, very precise. He says, the rise of the micro brands. This is what we're experiencing right now. Like, micro brands are rising. Now, selling to Costco is not something that only huge companies are doing, like, you know, bucket 15 years ago. You don't have to have huge warehouse with tons of SKUs and, you know, 20,000 employees to be able to sell to Costco. No, I'm working with Costco right now, and I've been applying with someone's products to Costco in the States, and they love those products. The guy had like, I don't know, 2 or 3 people in his company, not more than that, VAs, okay? And they love the product, so they opened the door to us to another 12 or 13, I think, different countries they sell at. So Costco Taiwan and Costco China and Australia and so on, including UK. And I was like, wow, where did that came from? And they know what is this label, because the person who connected me initially in Costco knows exactly what I'm doing. And he knew that we're not talking about huge label here, okay? So this is the rise of the micro brands. And I think everybody should jump on the boat and enjoy it as well.
Amazing. That sounds great. Well, so I'm just going to make sure that people know where to go to get this. And we're going to do a redirect so that people can remember, because we've got a horrible URL here with lots of strange letters in. So if you go to amazingfba.com/retail empire, amazingfba.com/retail empire, then there's going to be, we'll just redirect you over to the form. And that's basically a kind of free audit, isn't it, for people that you're going to check, are they potentially retail ready? And I think getting that, being willing to risk the fact you might say no, but you're close, is, I think, a valuable checkpoint for people as to how close they are to, in that terms, a micro brand. Because some people think they have a brand because they have a logo, but their product's exactly the same as everyone else. Whereas some people really do have an identity that's a little bit unique. And I think this is one of those moments where they can test that question by talking to you and with your incredible knowledge of this landscape, see whether they have something there or not. And even if you're just doing it to kind of test where you're at, I think it's an important sort of external, what's the word, a reality check. Just like trying to get a valuation for your business from an accountant is another one. It's an external reality check. I think that's, I'm always a big fan of getting outside from the day-to-day operations and seeing what somebody outside your business thinks about your business. So if nothing else, I think it's very valuable. So again, it's amazingfba.com/retail empire. In our next episode, we're going to talk about how to get retail ready. But for the moment, let's let people absorb that. And if they need more help, come to you. So, Tyler, thank you very much for opening our eyes to this amazing opportunity. Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast for 6- and 7-figure Amazon sellers. I really hope you found the show helpful to you. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a quick star rating. It will take you all of 30 seconds to do it, but it does mean we can be found by and help many more e-commerce business builders. I wish you fast and profitable scaling, and I hope you enjoy the process of building your 7-figure Amazon business. Thanks very much for listening.